I'm Kara Keehan, and this is Behind the Bench from AJP Heart and Circ. Today, we're talking with Dundavy Persand and Nicole Maddy. Dundavy and Nicole both won the FASEB Dream Award to attend a specialized APS professional course and have written an article summarizing their experience called Osteopathic Medical Student Perspective on Research. When I first met Nicole and Dundavy, they commented that as DO students, they focus on how structure affects function and how the translational research they have both worked on in the lab has only cemented their feelings that research is crucial for medical students and for clinicians. Let's dive deeper. Liz?
Thank you, Kara. Nicole and Dundavy, welcome to our podcast. I want to start with a very general double question, actually. So most students attend traditional, also known as allopathic medical school. So what made you choose an osteopathic school? And could you please do a quick summary of the common features and the major differences between a traditional and allopathic medical school?
So I'll talk more about the similarities between MD and DO first, and I'll talk about what the differences are. In terms of coursework with anatomy and physiology, we learn a lot of the same things, as well as different conditions and management. All of that is quite similar between an MD and DO school. However, I think that with DO programs, we're very focused on all the connections within the body. And we also get additional coursework on osteopathic manipulative medicine, and that basically looks at the idea of how structure affects function, and it's a hands-on approach to treating patients. As an example, if I had a patient who had headaches and I checked the patient's neck and found that they were really tense, that headache might be related to the muscle tension they have in their necks. So we have techniques like myofascial release, for example, that we use to release that tension and then help alleviate the headache a patient would have. So that's an example of what osteopathic manipulative medicine is and what makes that our program different from an MD program. And it's part of why I chose this. I really like having this additional hands-on approach, and I think it's useful even on rotations when we see patients. Sometimes they have issues that can't be addressed with medications, for example, and this hands-on approach is a great additional approach to trying to help our patients. So that's why I'm in this DO program.
Nicole?
So I mainly chose to go to an osteopathic school because I really did like that holistic approach that they take when it comes to treating our patients. With the field that I want to go into and wanting to be a medical examiner and perform future autopsies, I really need to know my anatomy and physiology through and through. And using OMM and that holistic approach is going to help me cement that anatomy knowledge. And it's something that I'm definitely going to be able to use in the future.
You mentioned in your editorial some, you know, basic challenges for medical students getting into research. Do you think those challenges were any different being in an osteopathic school and then versus an allopathic school? Or do you think they're pretty general from your experience?
I think for the most part, we have a lot of the same challenges as MD students. We're still taking the same coursework. There's still that same level of intensity that we need to overcome and the same amount of time management that comes with that. The major difference is that we have that extra coursework in osteopathic manipulative medicine. So we actually have a little bit less time to make time for the research and the other things that we want to do and pursue.
So when I was preparing for this podcast, I was reading a little bit about osteopathic medical schools, and it did say that you would have 200 extra hours of coursework compared to a normal medical school. So I would like you to give me some management time tips, please, because you not only are doing your medical school, your normal coursework, you're doing the extra 200 hours, and you're doing research. How can you do all of that?
Even though it is 200 hours more, I think that since it's all spread out over several weeks, it actually becomes more manageable. So we have OMM labs that are 2 hours each every week built into our schedule. And that's not that much more than we already have. So it is possible to manage that along with what we have in terms of our coursework. We did basically dedicate 8 hours of our time to our lab each week. And we were able to put that into our list of things to do for the day. I also feel that the more things we have to do, the more efficient we become with using our time. And so I think that's a lesson I learned as a medical student. The more I put into my schedule, the better I was using my time to make sure I could fit everything in.
So the busier you become, the less busy you are. Wow, that is very deep.
In a sense.
Hopefully I'm approaching that Zen point in my own career. So what led you both to, you know, you're starting off in medical school, you're now second year and third year, right? To want to become involved in research. What did you have experience as an undergrad and you knew you wanted to do that? Or, you know, how did you seek this out?
So I had previous research experience in undergrad. I did an honors thesis with my honors program, and I did research in cancer with a mentor from the graduate school. And then I went into graduate school and I just expanded on that research in a literature review. And then I took a year off before I applied to medical school. And when I was applying, I actually began working in Dr. Sepulveda's lab as a research technician. And then once I was accepted into NYITCOM, I was able to continue doing research a few hours a week. However, it was able to fit into my schedule and worked around my labs and exams. And it was just something that I really felt passionate about and really am excited to continue doing throughout medical school and residency and beyond.
So I just noticed that you are in the lab of Dr. Maria Sepulveda. She must be a fantastic mentor. I worked with her for more than 2 years. We were part of the Translational Physiology Interest Group from APS. She is very, very passionate about helping trainees. One of her roles was to try to get more trainees and get awards for trainees to go to experimental biology. So is she a role model? Is she one of the reasons that you guys are sticking to your guns and doing research?
She's definitely been a great role model and mentor for us. I just want to refer to when I first met her. I was interviewing at multiple labs to see what I was interested in and where I wanted to work. And I liked that she studied obesity, type 2 diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. But what struck me more when I interviewed with her was that she was so supportive of her students. She mentioned that she really supported us writing abstracts, making posters, going to conferences, and even as far as writing a paper. And I thought it would be great to have a mentor who would push me, you know, and challenge me to do more than I might have thought on my own. And so I had never thought to apply for a travel award, for example. And so I did that because she thought it would be a great idea and it worked out. And so much of what I was able to do and accomplish in this time is because she's been such a great mentor and helped both of us throughout our time in medical school.
So this class that you attended from APS was to help you prepare manuscripts, right? Like how to write scientifically for publication. So you both already had studies that you were feeling that they were ready at that point. What were you working on?
So for me, the research that I was working on that I brought to the APS course was focused in the perivascular adipose tissue around the aorta and the changes that happen during obesity. And I focused mainly on BCL6 as a potential culprit in the vascular changes and the dysfunction that happens in obesity.
My study looks at Western diet-induced obesity and its effects on vascular function in female rats. We specifically look at Western diet because it's a high-fat, high-carbohydrate diet that sort of models what Americans eat. We're very interested in looking at female animals because historically a lot of studies use male rats. And so that's why those specific things are part of our project. Something else we wanted to see was what happens when you reverse the diet. Does that help with vascular dysfunction as well as metabolic dysfunction we see with obesity?
Have either of you considered using a quarantine diet. It's like the Western diet, but with more fat and alcohol included as well, to give us a sense of what the effects might be on our health of that diet.
That would definitely be interesting. And I can confirm that I probably participate in that quarantine diet a little too much.
They don't call it the COVID-19 for nothing.
So how do you think the time you've been spending on research, and not only in the lab, but also doing this FASEB, well, having the FASEB award to go to the APS grant writing workshop, how do you think all these experiences have changed the way you are approaching your medical degree?
So for me specifically, I think that research has been a real instrumental part in helping me succeed in medical school. Like I said, I started at the lab before I actually entered school, so I had never taken anatomy yet. And being able to work with the animals and appreciate the anatomy of the rats and the mice, which is very, very similar to that of humans, really helped me succeed in medical school that way. It also gave me the opportunity to be exposed to clinical procedures that I wouldn't get to experience until third year. So we do a lot of echocardiograms and direct blood pressure measurements. And those procedures are very similar to that performed in humans. And the other thing I would say is that it's really helped me to critically think and critically read. And in the future, it's going to be very important to be able to move through all of the research that's being published and pick out the things that are truly relevant and will help my patients in the long run.
So what you just said there, it was actually one of the parts that struck with me on your editorial when you say that clinicians or physicians that are not used to the scientific thought, they're not familiar with scientific writing or to look at the rigor of the science, analyze the data, they might be misled from some of the publications they will read. And I think we all agree that both scientists and clinicians, we have very different ways of writing and thinking about things. And many times when we're even on conversations or when we're reading papers, a lot of stuff gets lost on translation. So I completely agree that having a research background or some research experience will help you a lot to become a better clinician, or at least to be able to look at the data and decide for yourself, is this something that I could apply? Or will this help my patient or not? So I really liked that part you guys put on your editorial.
Do you have any advice to those students who want to get into research and to do more and to be trained into thinking this way and how to get involved?
I just think that there's so much value to being able to do research, especially while we're in medical school, as opposed to starting it afterwards, because having a foundation in it at this point in time will help us when we get into residency, especially if we're interested in carrying on research. I do think it is possible time-wise, because we did manage to throw it into our schedules, even with the extra 200 hours of osteopathic manipulative medicine we had. And I think we both did perfectly fine with our scores on classes, and we're managing the research just fine. It's just about adding a certain amount of time each week to be able to do research and being consistent with that throughout. And, you know, I think that it helps us, like Nicole said, be able to critically assess work that's already been done and that might influence how we treat our own patients, as well as our own interests in initiating research that will help our patients. Either way, I think that it's useful to do research, and it's very possible to make the time for it during medical school. So I think that they shouldn't be afraid and feel like they won't be able to do it. They should try and see what happens. And if they're able to stay consistent, then they should do that. We started early on, and I think that benefited me because I had the time to actually fully develop a project and go from the point of starting it to writing a manuscript and hopefully publishing it. And so I think that any student would, you know, benefit greatly from that.
I think also some advice would be to live by your planner. I have my planner completely color-coded. Everything has its place. It has its own color. And then you can plan your days based on what you want to get done and what you need to get done and prioritize from there. And then everything seems a lot more manageable.
So in your editorial, you said during the course of the APS class that there was a lot of differences between your pre-class manuscripts and your post-class manuscripts. Would you care to enlighten us about one of the biggest changes that you made in your writing style or your approach to writing scientific manuscripts that you got from the class?
I think the biggest thing for me was trying to change my thought process of writing from that more creative undergrad writing to a scientific writing. I know in my manuscript, there was a lot of points that people would say, okay, you don't need these words. You don't need to say it this way. Just say it completely straight and to the point. And I think that was an adjustment, but it definitely helps to get the point across and makes it easier to read in the long run.
Was that something that Dr. Lindsay told you? Because I saw, I can absolutely hear her saying that. Get to the point.
Yes, 1,000%. She says it the whole time.
So I don't know if you know this. I was a postdoc in her lab. So she did it to me many times too. So don't feel bad. We all learn how to write science while you're doing science. It's not something that you're born with, for sure.
So did you come out on the other side of your course writing like scientists? What do you think?
I think I'm much better at writing like a scientist now. And I've had even more practice. We worked on trying to make an AHA proposal that was a lot like a grant. So that was my first time doing that. I definitely think about my audience a lot more, about how I can make it interesting but focused at the same time, and how I should frame everything I write to really target it to, you know, the scientists that I'm trying to get to read my paper.
Although oftentimes writing the skills of writing a grant are actually different than the skills of writing a paper. I think a few more adjectives sprinkled in there in the grant, like unexpectedly and surprisingly.
Strategic adjectives. Exceptional. That would be the strategic use of adjectives, not the superfluous use of adjectives.
The old mouse died.
Exactly.
I think our favorite word is strikingly.
And hopefully, I'm sure you, on your experience on the workshop, you learned this too. You always need peers to read whatever you wrote. You always need a second opinion, a different point of view. When you think something is clear, they might think it's not. So it's very helpful to have your colleagues or your mentors or your friends revising your manuscript.
Do you reach out to each other in that way? Or do you have other people in your circles that you utilize as peer reviewers?
We definitely work with each other on our papers. We have each other edit. It's always useful to have fresh eyes on it, because after, you know, so long of looking at my paper, I cannot see anything that's wrong with it anymore, and I need someone else to look at it. So Nicole definitely looks at it. We also have other members in our lab that help us out and take a look at our papers, and then we will show it to Dr. Sepulveda and have her edit it. But Dr. Mary Lindsay is also one of our mentors now. And so we've also emailed her to ask her for advice, and she's always super helpful with that as well.
So after all of this is done and you've both got your manuscripts accepted and published, and you get that final formatted version that looks so pretty, do you think, you know, you're going to keep doing this after medical school? Like, do you see yourself being physician scientists, having labs as your own, of your own? Or do you think, oh, this is an important piece of my training, but, you know, I'm going to focus on the clinical practice in my future?
For me, I definitely want to continue doing research throughout my career. It's definitely something I have a passion for. And regardless of all the things that it's going to help me with in just medical school, it's also something that I like to do and want to do. And I want to try and make time for it in some way in the future.
I agree with Nicole. I genuinely enjoy doing research, and I don't want to let that go. I want it to be a part of what I do, even as a resident. I don't know that I'll necessarily have my own lab, but I definitely think I will participate in research projects or be a part of a group that starts them in some way, even as I go forward into my clinical years.
Are you involved in a big team? Since you have limited time, do you get a lot of help from other students, or I don't know, do you have postdocs that can mentor you as well? How does your team work?
So our lab is mostly just students and our mentor, Dr. Sepulveda. We don't have any postdocs at the moment. We are going to get another research tech since I had to leave due to getting into medical school. At the moment, we are an all-female lab, which is kind of nice that women in STEM is really becoming a lot more common. And even in my undergraduate classes, there was a lot more women than men. And that's always nice to see that women are interested in science and continuing to pursue it as a career.
What was one of the most challenging aspects of learning to work in the lab?
So one of the more challenging things for me was working with animals. I had never done that before I worked in this lab. And so it was completely new to me. When I went to the animal lab to work with the rats, I was absolutely terrified. I didn't want to even touch them. And so my mentor was convinced that maybe I wouldn't be able to work with them, but I didn't want to stop just because I was afraid. So I tried. But we did have a couple of funny situations. I know sometimes I'd grab them by the tail and wonder if they were going to just run off and be unleashed into our animal lab, which can't be a good thing. But once one of my partners and I, we were trying to get a blood sample. And so the tail came off and we were like, what is happening right now? But apparently that does happen with rats and it's totally normal. But we were both completely shocked and had no idea that was something that would happen. So that's a challenge that we came across.
So yes, it is bad when an animal gets away from you and runs around in the lab and then you have to chase it around in the corners and track it down. Not necessarily speaking from personal experience here, but
yeah,
oh my gosh.
It happened to
me once.
And then somebody opens the door and then now suddenly there's a hallway involved and you have to yell, nobody open your doors.
That's why I close the door every time I take the weights of the animals. Like, I'm so afraid I'm going to let go and it's just going to go running.
Oh my gosh.
Nicole and Dundavy, thank you very much for joining us today and talking about your research experiences and your opportunities to learn and grow in scientific writing thanks to FASB and the APS.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much. This was great.
The current events that are surrounding the pandemic have reinforced the importance of understanding the scientific progress that is made in research labs. DOs, MDs, and nurses as well that provide direct care for the public are essential translators of that knowledge. The enthusiasm in research that medical students like Dundavy and Nicole have exhibited today will hopefully inspire more students to become involved. Either way, we look forward to their future discoveries from their time spent behind the bench. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.